But I think it's very valuable and very pertinent to the things that most of us need to learn when we are looking at our next position. And so I want to introduce to you Larry Stiebel. Many of you will know him. He has been such a good friend of FEI and such an incredible friend of career services. And my thanks goes to him many, many times over.
Thank you.
And so I will let him introduce himself because he's very good at doing that too. But before we do that, Jim Anderson has a small announcement, and he will give that. And then with any further ado, we'll go over to Larry. For anybody that is interested, our next program will be in January, January 9th, same time, same place. Okay? Thank you very much.
Tomorrow night, FEI is having its December dinner right here at the Marriott. And because of the time of year the attendance for tomorrow night is a little light. And so we're going to offer to everybody here that if you would like to go to this dinner tomorrow night, it is free. It comes with a free drink. And because we would like to get some more people in the room. So we'd like to offer that out to anyone who wants to come. The speaker is going to be Stephanie Sonnabend. She's the CEO of the Sonesta Hotel. She has a fascinating story. And so it's one of those things, if you're not doing anything tomorrow night and you'd like to do some more networking, it'll be an excellent opportunity to do that. And you'll hear a great speaker and have a great dinner and a free drink at the same time. So if anyone is interested in going, you are more than welcome. Does anyone know whether or not they'd like to come? Because I can take your business card and make sure that you have a name tag and that type of thing all ready for you tomorrow. Would anyone like to go? Let me take your card. So all you have to do is show up tomorrow. It'll be at. It's a very good deal. You can't get better than this. It's worth about $75. So anyone else? If you change your mind, just email me or give me a call tomorrow morning or sometime, and I'm sure we can fit you in. Okay. All right, Larry.
Thank you very much. There's some familiar faces in the crowd. I was here in October giving a talk at Financial Executives International, and after the talk, a woman came up to me and said, "You know, I've been going to these FEI meetings for years, and I must say you have the warmest ability to convey technical and subject matter topics. How do you do it?" And I was just very flattered and puffed up and telling her a little about me. And then I get home and I go to the dictionary and look up the definition of warm, and it means not so hot. In that spirit, I'm going to use the word warm, meaning not so hot. And I'm going to talk about three things. The title, How to Kill Your Competition, is in one sense designed to get your attention, but it's in another sense, it's sending a message that many of the models of how you find a job search that you read about in job search books and that outplacement firms tell you about are just not going to work in this environment. And so I want to discuss some top level reasons why that is the case. Second, I'm going to talk about two research techniques that you can use to kill your competition. And third, I want to talk about what I call the killer close. And we'll be doing some web-based research, so I'm hoping you have a computer with you or that you're sitting next to somebody who does have a computer. And does everybody have the code to log on?
No. No.
Jim, can you help us?
Yes. What you want to do is go to your computer settings. And you want to search for a network.
You might want to sit next to somebody with a computer.
Sure. And your Wi-Fi should pick up two Marriott networks. You can pick either one, but I would go with the strongest signal. work when you want to basically...
Does anybody need a computer? I've got an extra.
You have to go onto a website that's a public website, like Google or something like that. And then it will prompt you to put in the 4-digit code.
Okay. And you gave the 4-digit code?
The 4-digit code's on the table.
It's, oh, okay.
9650.
Okay. By the way, now that Jim has told you what the code is, I'm taping this conversation, and it's going to be, if anybody of you would like a copy of this talk tonight, give me your emails and I will send you a copy of the MP3s. I'm also going to be referring to a couple of articles, and if any of you want the articles, again, give me your business cards and I'll send you the copy of the articles. The first part is sort of the big picture, and I'm going to talk about three reasons why things have changed and why they will continue to change. One, demographics is destiny. Two, unlearning is harder than learning. And three, small is beautiful. Big idea one is demographics is destiny. When I was going to graduate school in psychology and I read an article by Sigmund Freud. And in the article, he said, biology is destiny. And I was struck by that. Biology is destiny. And I realized, you know, that's probably true. I think I've accomplished some things in my life. I think a lot, I'd like to think a lot of what I've accomplished is because of hard work, self-discipline, stick-to-itiveness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reality is, a lot of what I've been able to accomplish is because I was born a white, tall male, relatively good looking, without any physical deformities, and in relatively good health. If any of those things had changed, but the rest of my life would have changed. Biology is destiny. When you look at the nature of economies, demographics is destiny. Natural resources is destiny. And in that spirit, I came across an article that was published in March 2008 in the Harvard Business Review. I write for the Harvard Business Review, so I kind of know their schedule. For that article to have been published in 2008, the author had to have submitted it probably the second quarter of 2007. So again, keep that time frame in mind, because everything hit the fan in September of 2008. So he was probably writing this a year before things started going wrong. The man was a demographer, and he wrote Vanishing Jobs, Blame the Boomers. His name is Philip Longman. It was published in March 2008. And if any of you would like a copy of the article, again, give me your business cards and just write HBR and I'll send you the article. What he said was as following. Demographics is destiny for economies. You have the World War II boomers. They're moving into retirement. They're getting older. And he says that's going to have two social implications. The first is everything that we know, that healthcare costs are going to go up. And they're going to go up so high that employers are going to be looking for alternatives to hiring full-time people. They will be looking to outsource to foreign countries. They will be looking, instead of hiring full-time people, they'll be hiring interim people, they'll be hiring temps, they'll be hiring consultants, anything to avoid hiring full-time people. He predicted, again, a year before, that the unemployment rate would go up and probably stay up for another 10 to 15 years. The second, so he said an older population is going to bring less opportunities for those seeking employment. And again, this was going on at a time when in HR circles, they were talking about the war for talent, that as the older population started retiring, there was going to be this gulf, and there weren't enough younger people to fill the void. He was saying that's not going to happen. The unemployment rate is going to be high, and it's going to stay high. The second thing that he said was as populations age demographically, they become more conservative and more risk averse. We see that in Japan, and their inability to sort of seize what's going on in their economy. What are the implications for those of us in the room? One is we have about a 7% unemployment rate in the Boston market. Over the next 3 years, the unemployment rate in the Boston market will rise. It will not fall, it will rise. It will rise for the reasons that were in today's Boston Globe article. How many of you had changed? Did you see all that? You got two things going on. They're both bad. One is there will be cutbacks in federal spending for research and development. There will be cutbacks in military expenses. That's a big part of the Boston economy. A second thing that was not addressed in the article, but it's apparent, is whether you liked their politics or whether you didn't like their politics. Ed Kennedy was a lion in the Senate, and Barney Frank was a force to be reckoned with in the House, and they were able to steer money into the Bay State. Kennedy is gone, and Barney Frank is going. They're not going to be replaced. And we've lost a seat in Congress, so that our political pull in D.C. is heading in the wrong direction. It just is what it is. My implications for me and implications for you. I think if we get into recovery mode, I think recovery is going to be 5 to 6% unemployment rate. In Boston, we're not going to see 3 and 4%. It's not going to happen. In the rest of the country, we're now at 9 to 10. It's a recovery is going to be 6 to 7%. Second, and this may be of more value to you, as the society as a whole becomes more conservative, there are certain words that will become more valued. For example, when 25 years ago, when I was in the job market, competence, aggressiveness, that's what you wanted to talk about. Competence and hunger, competence and speed, competence and risk-taking. I think the mantra for you is competence and trust. What society is lacking in institutions, business institutions, religious institutions, government institutions, is trust. What people are hungry for is trust. The unwritten thing that they're looking, can I trust you? You need to be able to answer that. We will be talking about specific things to do. I think there's a hunger for trust out there. As society ages, that will be more explicit. Now again, we live in the Boston area, so when you're looking at places like Boston, we're still going to be younger than the rest of the country. But as a general rule, we are not going to be immune from what's going on in the rest of the country. Any questions about that? That's big idea number one. Any questions? So unemployment is not going to drop when there's a recovery. It's going to stay high. Second is the coin of the realm is going to be competence and trust. If you want to organize your job search, organize around those two themes, competence and trust. I'm going to arbitrarily divide the world into three 30-year periods, and I want you to tell me when did you learn your habits? When did you learn your values? The first period is 1911 to 1943. This is the Depression period. This is the World War II period. I'm not asking you when you were born. I'm asking you when did you learn your values and your habits. The second period is 1944 to 1974, another 30-year period. For example, I was born in 1947, but I don't remember the 40s. I don't even remember the 50s. 60s, I do remember. And a lot of my values and my habits and my sense of things really came about in the 60s. So I would say 1960s for me, even though I was born in 1947. And then last 1975 to 2005. So let's have a show of hands. How many of you learned your values between 1911 and 1943? Okay, two. How many of you learned your values between 1975 and 2005? And how many of you learned your values between 1944 and 1974? Okay, so more people in this room are in that 1944 to 1974 period. What do we know about that? What do we know about that period that shaped our values and our attitudes? Well, what we know about that period, it was a very unique, perfect storm. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean it was a perfect storm in a positive way. A series of events came together that had never before come together in history and never will come together again. The series of events from 1946 to 1976 was as follows. First, the consumer was king. You had a whole bunch of unmet consumer needs because of the Depression. People just couldn't afford to buy things. Then World War II happened. People couldn't afford to buy things. It just wasn't there. It was diverted for the war. So by the time peace rolls around, you know, people just hadn't bought cars and washing machines. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff that needed to be replaced. So there's this tremendous unmet consumer need. Second, the babies were being born right after 1946. The boomers, many of the people in this room, they had consumer needs. That was going to drive that. Who's going to meet those consumer needs? Japan? I don't think so. Japan was destroyed. Germany? I don't think so. Germany was destroyed. Europe? No. The United States was it. So you had this confluence of tremendous needs for consumer products and only one country that could supply those products, and that was the United States. So you had this tremendous uprise of the middle class. And during this period, we learned that doing a job search was really about showing up. Doing a job search was about doing a half-assed resume, going to the career office, presenting your qualifications, and waiting around for the interviews to come. And you didn't have to be that good to get a job during that period. You just have to show up. And that was a lot of the values for those of us who grew up in 1946 to 1976. It was a bubble. It was a wonderful period of time. Thank God I grew up in that period. It was easy. Those days are gone. All of those confluences that I talked about, consumer being king, we're the only industrial guys around, middle class is rising, all of those are gone. We're now dealing with a very, a much harsher environment to find a job. You notice what I haven't said. I haven't talked about Lehman Brothers. I haven't talked about Bear Stearns. I haven't talked about Europe. I see these as symptoms, not causes. These are the causes, the demographics, the unique bubble that has burst and is not going to come back. Job markets are harsher. They will stay harsher. You're competing not only with people in this room, you're competing with people around the world. We have a shrinking middle class. It's not the Democrats' fault. It's not the Republicans' fault. It just is. It's a much harsher world. And for those of us who grew up between 1946 and 1976, it was a much nicer world. We just didn't know it was nice. Any questions about that? It also means that for many of us in this room, we have to do one of the hardest things. When I went to school, I thought learning is really tough. Now, at my age, I realized learning is not that difficult. Unlearning is the tough thing. And we have to unlearn many of the bad habits that we learned about how do you find a job, because it's not going to work in this particular market. Any questions? Okay, last big idea. As small as beautiful. Money Magazine, December 2nd, 2010. Two out of every three new jobs in the country are created by small business. Two out of every three jobs in the country are created by small business. In the last month, small businesses alone were responsible for 58% of the private sector job growth in the country. Conversely, The Wall Street Journal on December 8th, 2011, in other words, like last week, said 11 large companies in the United States have laid off 600,000 people in the last two decades. The probability of anybody getting a job in this room in a large company is going to be very small. It could happen, but it's relatively small. Where the opportunities are going to be the small, unsophisticated companies. The small, unsophisticated companies that typically don't have an HR staff, don't really know how to find talent, that's where the opportunities are. And many of the traditional approaches to finding opportunities are really focused on some mid-market companies as opposed to small companies. Small companies are unsophisticated. They often don't even know how to articulate what their needs are. You have to find creative ways to tell them what their needs are without insulting them. Small companies often have the inability to access talent. They think they do, but they don't. And again, and one of the things that you're all going to be dealing with in a world where trust, as I point out, trust is king. Small companies mistrust large companies, and many of you have a legacy of working for large companies, and so there may be a sense of they mistrust you because you come from those large companies. How do you overcome that? So we're going to be trying to deal with some of those issues today. Any questions about anything I said? Okay. Why don't you stand up? You've been sitting around too long. Stand up. Stretch. Come on. All right. Sit down. That's enough of that. You're having too much fun. One of my heroes is Anwar Bose of Bose Corporation up in Framingham. And he once said, find out what your competitors are doing, then for God's sakes, don't do it. Which I've always taken to heart. So when a lot of his competitors were having big speakers, he went to small speakers. When a lot of his competitors were making wood veneer cabinets, he was making it white. When a lot of his competitors were making control panels that looked like the inside of airplane cockpits, he was going for simplicity. He always said, try to find out what your competitors are doing and don't do what your competitors are doing. And that's one of the lessons that we teach our clients. Find out what your competitors are doing and for God's sakes, don't do it. There is no one best way to find a job, but you want to find out what your competitors are doing and don't do the same thing. The trick and the art is, how do you design a job search campaign that outflanks your competition, is professional, and demonstrates trustworthiness? And that's the sort of balancing act. I have three recommendations for you. I'm going to be focusing on the job interview in this talk. Recommendation one is go to Dunkin' Donuts. If you have a job interview, what I would suggest that you do is the day before the job interview, go to the nearest Dunkin' Donuts to where the company is and make friends with the people behind the counter and tell them you have a job interview nearby. Could they introduce you to some of the employees coming in for coffee in the morning? So be there at 7:30 in the morning and get an introduction to a couple of employees. Then, ask the following question. I'm a candidate for a job at the company you work for. Can you tell me what the best thing and the worst thing is about working here? And what you really are interested in is, what is their reaction to the question? If they clam up, if they get nervous by the fact that you ask the question, that tells you a lot about the corporate culture right there. If they smile and start talking to you, that tells you something about the culture. It doesn't even matter what they say. But what's the reaction to the fact that you asked the question? Let me give you an example of how Dunkin' Donuts works. I had a client who was going in for a job interview. He was the chief operating officer for a British company, and this was a unit that sold the production. They assembled stuff, and then they sold it throughout the United States. And he went to Dunkin' Donuts and was talking to some people in the operations. And he goes to the CEO, and he said, you know, in preparation for this meeting, I've done some research on your company. He says, turns out there's a perception that the quality of the products that are brought in from the UK is really inferior, and that you're moving to get the same products shipped from Japan, and people are much happier with the Japanese quality than the UK quality. And the CEO was blown away that a candidate knew that much detail about the company. And he got hired. It was a way that he killed the competition with information. And he just did it by showing up at Dunkin' Donuts. Again, Anwar Bose, find out what your competitors are doing, and for God's sakes, don't do it. Any questions about that? Okay, second, you outflank your competition by doing more research than your competition. We do executive level outplacement, and we also do retained search for board members, CEOs, and CFOs. I'm shocked at the lack of research that I see among candidates. They just haven't done research on the company, or sometimes, in the case of a confidential company, they could be doing research on the search firm and let them know that they cared enough to do some research about me and my company. They don't do that. And again, I think search people are as vain as everybody else, and they love the fact that, hey, you cared enough to do some research about the company. So research is important. So you've got your computer. So let's talk about some techniques. And again, I'm not here to insult anybody. Some of the things I'm going to say may strike you as basic. But let's go over the basics. First of all, I assume. I'm not going to spend time going on. You all know how to get to a 10K? Yep. Is that a yes?
Yep.
Okay. Now, one of the things I don't see people doing is, again, going back to my first talk, the opportunities are more likely to be in small companies, not large companies. The opportunities are more likely to be in privately held companies than in large companies. So one of the things that you can do is, if you're going to have an interview at a small private company, find a public company that is in the same space as the private company and look at the section of the 10K that does this, the strategic overview. For example, if I was going for an interview to become CFO of a company that owns three restaurants in the Boston area, I'd probably go to the 10K for Darden's and say, what do they say is going on strategically with family style restaurants in the United States, and say, what does that apply? If I was going for an interview with the Weston Lawn and Garden Supply Shop, I would probably go to the 10K of Lowe's. I'd have to apply a discount, take things with a grain of salt, but I would want to get a sense of what does Lowe's see about this competitive landscape, and assume that some of the things are going to apply to the Weston Lawn and Garden and Supply Shop. So again, use the 10K in a broader sense than before. Any questions? Yep.
I do that all the time. And mm-hmm. I'm surprised the amount of competitive and industry information that a lot of people get in the 10Ks. So, you know, you got to do that because it's just a wealth of information.
Yeah, I mean, it's there for you. It's free. You know, just it's there.
The second time is go to some company information that's available on investment company websites that's available.
Yeah.
Which is another source. And that's also unbiased, even though a 10K has got to be pretty
right.
legit.
And again, you know, one of the issues for the how many of you are looking for CFO jobs? One of the things that I, you know, you want to position yourself as a value add player who can make a contribution to strategy. So go in with some good strategic questions, and look going to the strategic section on the 10Ks of public companies that are comparable is a good way to do this. I'm going to show you a website that I find extremely valuable. How many of you, I'd like you to think about someone that you know who's on the board of a public company. Think of the name. You all have the name? Now I want you to go to Google or whatever search site you're doing and type in the following. Investing space, Business Week space, name of that individual that you're thinking of. Investing space, Business Week space, name of the individual that you're thinking of. You want to go sit next to somebody?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. See if you look for the person's name, and when you get the person's name, raise your hand so I know that you're there. So you're there. How about you guys? Investing space, Business Week space, name of the individual. You might want to write that down for future, or give me your business cards and I'll send you a copy of these PowerPoint slides and then you can have them. Investing space, Business Week space, name of the individual. Raise your hand if you're there. Okay. Under the name, do you see a little diagram with a bunch of heads? Search, click down, which it should say network. How many of you see that? Do you see it?
Yeah.
You see it?
Company overview.
No, not company overview. You want to go to people. Again, if you're still not clear, think of a public company, any public company, go to investing space, Business Week space, name of the public company. Then when you get there, go look at the bar and go to the word people. Then go to the board of directors. Click on any name on the board of directors on the right side of the screen. Look for the symbol with a bunch of heads. When you see the symbol with a bunch of heads, click.
What was that? If you punch in the name, I just.
Investing space, Business Week is one word.
Oh, Business Week is one word.
Yeah, Business Week is. Business Week is one word. How many of you got it?
Bloomberg Business Week.
How you doing? Okay, so Investing Business Week staples. So they did Investing Space Business Week staples. We go there. You see where people is? You hit the word people. And then you see the here are the executives, and here's the board, and you see there's the heads, and it says relationships. So click on anyone. You got it?
So here are the people.
Yeah. So here are the people.
Oh, click on that.
Click on that.
Okay.
Could you show the other people on the table what we're talking about? You got it?
Can you do it on there?
Yeah, okay. So let me show you. Let me show you here. Somebody give me a company or a name. Somebody, anybody.
Charles Wagner.
Okay. So investing, INVESTING, space, Business Week, one word, space, CHARLES, and WAGG?
GN.
WAGONER?
NER.
WAGNER? Okay. Okay, so here's Charles Wagner, executive profile. Now, here he's got 14 relationships. Do you all see how I got there? Do you all have identified somebody? Yes? Anybody have a problem? Okay. So you click on C board relationships, or you click on here. And now I have everybody that Charles Wagner knows who's on a board of directors. So if I have a networking meeting with Charles Wagner, I can go in with a list of people that I would like him to send my resume to or to introduce me to. Someone like Charles Wagner, I assume, is a busy guy. if he's not going to help you, he's not going to help you. It doesn't matter what you say or do. On the other hand, he may appreciate that you're trying to help him help you and not waste his time. So if you want to be networked to Richard Stein, say so. Okay. Any questions about that? By the way, investing space, Business Week space, name of company, is a useful kind of overview about public companies. How many of you are interested or have been involved with nonprofit organizations? Okay. Again, for those of you who are in the, how many of you have not been with nonprofits but would be interested in nonprofits? Okay. So for some of you in the room, I'm going to bore you to death, and for some of the people in the room, I'm going to tell you something you may not know. There's a form called the Form 990, which is the sort of equivalent to a 10K. It's required filings by all nonprofits. It's very cool, and it's easy and free to access. And the way you do it is through a website called GuideStar.com, or it could be GuideStar.org, GUIDESTAR. You sign up for GuideStar, and then it's free. And you sign up for the limited service, which is free. Then you type in the name of the nonprofit that you're interested in. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, you want to look for the Form 990. And that's what you want to focus on. The Form 990 will tell you really cool things like the financials of the company, lawsuits against the company, compensation of the key officers.
Top five,
yep. So it's a nice thing to have before you walk in for the interview. The one thing you do have to be aware of is that there is a lag time on GuideStar, and often I've seen Form 990s that might be years old. But it's better than not knowing what it is. Has anybody used a Form 990? Okay, any experiences you've had with it?
It's not as good as a 10K, but boy, it sure gives you some insight into what the companies are, what the power structure is, who the people are, and you can walk in with an awful lot more knowledge about the company, especially someone like me, that I'm at the strategy
right.
C level, and you just gotta understand that also leads you to other people, other industries, other competitors, and that's just part of getting ready.
Yep, it'll also tell you who are the consulting firms, including the law firms and the CPA firms, that they're spending money with. So it's a fabulous resource. Again, to repeat, it's called GuideStar.com, GUIDESTAR, GuideStar.com. It's free. Was it GuideStar.com?
Oh, org.
Okay, GuideStar.org. And then you want to sign up, and then you want to go to the Form 990. How many of you know a lawyer? How many of you wish you didn't know a lawyer? Anyway, what is Nexus? This is a pop quiz.
It's to do legal research.
Right. LexisNexis will do legal research. Now, when you're looking at a public company, the lawsuits that have been filed against the company will be in the 10K. So that's easy. But what about a privately held company? Where are you going to find that? Answer, Lexis. Before I go to any privately held company, I want to know what lawsuits have been filed against the company. I'll also do another Lexis search on the individual. I want to know what lawsuits have been filed against the individual. Now, the way I look at this is, it's simply, I'm looking to manage my risks. This is the United States of America. I believe there is an amendment in the Bill of Rights saying Americans have the right to sue anybody for any reason at any time, and we exercise that. So one lawsuit against one company or one individual, I just don't take that very seriously. I'm looking for a pattern of lawsuits. I'm looking for repetition of lawsuits. I'm looking for just patterns. But I don't get upset about one lawsuit. But it's a good thing to do. Again, it's called Lexis. Now, Lexis is tied with another company called Nexus, and often it's called LexisNexis. If you're an alumni of a university, every university will have LexisNexis. You may be able to tap into it through your alumni. If you're with an outplacement firm, they will have LexisNexis, or they should have LexisNexis. You can tap into that. Lexis will give you the lawsuits. Nexus will allow you to tap into newspapers and magazines from around the world, not just local. So that's a good resource. Again, if you're not tied to an outplacement firm, you're not tied to university, you might go ask a lawyer if a lawyer could do that. Maybe even your local banker might have access to LexisNexis.
Sorry.
How many of you use DNB credit reports? Okay. Website is dnb.com, davidnancyboy.com. Again, we are looking at opportunities at small companies, small private companies, and often the only time you're going to get information may be through a DNB report. DNB report can be about $130, but it's worth it if you're going for a serious interview. Now, I will let you know that we are a private company, and we have told the DNB people that our last year's sales was $14 billion. You can't necessarily trust private company data, particularly if it's unaudited. On the other hand, a lot of data is audited, and a lot of the data is valid. What I have found when I look at DNB, It will tell me lawsuits that have been initiated against the company, and again, I'm looking for patterns. It will tell me the biography of the CEO, and I'm looking, has the person a stable history or an unstable history? I look at the relationship between the current ratio and the Paydex index. The Paydex index is how they are treating their vendors, and the it gets into quartiles, first, you know, top tier, mid tier, bottom tier, and the more you're in the bottom tier, the later they are in paying their vendors. Now, companies can sometimes be late simply because they don't have the money. Companies can be late because, like retail, it's a very seasonal business, and there's time they got money and there's times they don't have money. So the Paydex in and of itself is simply a piece of data. I then look at the Paydex in relationship to the current ratio. If the current ratio, which is current assets divided by current liabilities, if the current ratio is low, well, then I expect a poor Paydex. They probably don't have the money. But what I find interesting and diagnostically useful is when I see a high current ratio, particularly one that's 0.1.3 and higher, which means there's $1.30 in assets to pay every dollar that we owe. If it's a high current ratio and a low Paydex, to me that indicates there's a philosophy of screwing the vendors. And when I say that, when I see that, if they're screwing the vendors, they're going to screw the employees too. So again, to quote the old American Express ad, D&B credit reports, don't leave home without them. Any of you have used D&B reports, find it useful, or what do you use when you use a D&B report?
Well, I've used it to screen potential equipment loans and leases, and as you mentioned, the data can be a little bit spotty and not really reliable, but you can get a snapshot about the credit profile.
Anybody else use it in interesting ways? This is not the second coming here, but it's a useful snapshot, and again, the more it gives you some information. Any of you have used RMA annual statement studies? Robert Morris Associates. This is a company in Philadelphia that has the best business model I've ever seen. What Robert Morris Associates, they are a service to the banking industry. Every time a company goes for a loan, they are required to provide copies of the balance sheet and income statement to the bank, right? The bank sends a copy to Robert Morris Associates, which then tabulates and collects the data and sells it back to the bank. Is that a model or what? Why didn't I think of that? Who said the definition of consulting was, you want to know the time? You call a consultant. He says, let me borrow your watch, tells you the time, then sells you the watch back. That is RMA. That's what they do. They consolidate all of this information, and it is in the form of the RMA annual statement studies. Every banker has the RMA statement studies, so that when you're going for your loan, they can immediately compare your financial information with that of a broader sample of other companies, and it gets very, very detailed. RMA can compare men's hose manufacturers and women's hose manufacturers in specific regions of the country. So it gets you can slice it very thin. RMA, it's called e-statement studies. The RMA e-statement studies, every banker has them. So if there's ever been a commercial banker that owes you a favor, just ask them to run an RMA e-statement study. It's available at business schools online, and it's called e-statement studies. Any questions about that? Any of you? Yeah?
Just got a question back to the public companies. A similar form to a 10K, maybe for an international company, maybe maybe a UK-based company or a German-based company. Is there anything equivalent?
That's a very good question. Does anybody know? I don't. Off the top of my head, I don't know. It's a good question.
What about private venture-backed companies? A lot of times the DBs are sparse. They don't provide the financial statements often.
Yep.
The other techniques I think work because obviously you can find the board members, usually the board members. A lot of times they're venture partners, but then oftentimes.
Are you talking about the venture capital firm itself, or are you talking about the investments of
portfolio invested company, the company?
Okay.
A lot of times the VCs, there's a lot of restrictions on providing out information.
Yeah.
So and a lot of times they're young, so you might have a couple of years at best, maybe
yes.
3 years. So the chance for a lot of these institutional databases to catch up to them
right.
isn't really there. So any suggestions specifically in that
area? First of all, there in these young companies, there isn't a track record, so there isn't much that you're going to get. I would, just as a practical matter, and as a routine matter, I would do, I would go to news.google.com, and I would type in the name of the CEO. I would type in the name of the key partner in the venture firm. Have they been in the news lately? If so, in what capacity? I have had a number of unpleasant surprises where a candidate I was going to be presenting to a company, and I just as a sort of a quality check and as a risk management check, I just did a Google News, and then I found that the person had some sort of really negative histories, and it was in a paper outside the